Parshas Vayigash, in the climax of Yehuda's impassioned and desperate plea to Yosef for the return of Binyamin, he explains, Ki avdecha aravis hanar, me'im avi le'mar, im lo avienu elecha v'chatasi lavi kol hayamim. For thy servant became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, If I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. This was the consequence of Yehuda's promise to Yaakov in Parshas Miketz, Anochi ervenu miyadi tuvakshenu, im lo havi yosiv elecha v'sektiv lefanecha v'chatasi lecha kol hayamim. I will be surety for him, of my hand shalt thou require him. If I bring him not unto thee and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever. The Gemara in Bava Basra does indeed attempt to derive the halachic concept of arvus from Yehuda's commitment to Yaakov, his father. Amar Rav Huna, minayin la'arev d'mishtabed, what is the source of the legal obligation of an arev? T'chsiv, anochi ervenu miyadi tuvakshenu. Matkifla Rav Chista objects, this cannot be the general source of the obligation of an arev. Ha'kablanus hi. This is a special case of arvus, kablanus, where the arev actually received the money from the malveh, from the lender, on the way to the borrower. T'chsiv, t'naos al yadiv, ani yeshivenu. Yehuda told Yaakov, give me Binyamin and I'll return him to you. So he took custody of Binyamin. So that's a special case, and this cannot be the source for arvus in general. The Gemara then tries various other psukim, and the conclusion of the Gemara is, Elam Ravashi bahu hanah dekom hemen le gomru mishtabe nafshe. The Arev gets hanah. The hanah is that the malva, the lender, trusts him and releases the money to the lova upon his commitment, upon his say-so. So that's a hanah, that he's a reliable, trustworthy person. So he reciprocates and he commits himself to guarantee the loan. In spite of this maskana, poskim do, at least sometimes, refer to the original derivation of anochi ervenu as a primary source for the notion of arvus, as we shall see. Now, arev in Choshen Mishpat has both a technical sense, several simanim in Choshen Mishpat near Hilchas Halva, the case of a guarantor, of a cosigner, cosigning a loan, promising the lender that he will assure him that the money will be returned. If the lova defaults, he can turn to him. But arev also in Choshen Mishpat has a broader sense that in various cases, someone who receives nothing directly from someone else can nevertheless accept an obligation toward that person if that person acts and commits himself based upon his say-so. The model for this is a Gemara in Kiddushin. Gemara says, Amar Rava, if a woman says, Tein mana leploni v'akad ishlach, the woman says, instead of giving the kess of Kiddushin, the ring or whatever, to me, as is normal, give it to so-and-so, someone else, and thereby I shall be married to you, mekudeshes, midin arev. That works. She becomes mekudeshes, and the model is arev. Arev, lav afalgav, lo mati hana liyade, kamashabe nafshe. And arev receives no direct hana, the Gemara says, bahi hana dekom hemenle, but he receives no, the actual money goes to the love and not to the arev. Nevertheless, kamashabe nafshe, he commits himself and he is legally liable. Hayitzanami. This woman too, afalgav lamata hana liyada, even though she did not receive the kesef of kedushin, it went to somebody else upon her say-so. Kamashabdo machni anafsha. She commits herself based on the mekadesh disposing of the money according to her instructions. And this in general, this is the model for a very broad concept of arvus that weaves its way throughout halacha. This is similar to the legal notion of reliance damages, the measure of compensation given to a person who suffered an economic harm for acting in reliance on a party who failed to fulfill their obligation. This is the notion of arvus in halacha too. If you commit yourself, either explicitly or perhaps even implicitly, as we shall see, and someone else acts or fails to act or relies on you and thereby commits himself to a course of action based on your explicit or implicit commitments, changes his position, to use the legal jargon, you can be held liable for damages that person incurs, not just damages, but as we shall see, even loss of profit, loss of potential revenue. In this lecture, we shall consider a number of loci in halacha where this principle of arvus appears, and we shall thereby learn some of the major principles, major rules that limb the application of arvus. By way of introduction, we should just note that many of these applications There will also be the concept of Garmi. Arvus, in a certain sense, is the little sibling of the more powerful and broader notion of Garmi. Damages, indirect damages, torts. In many cases where your commitment causes someone to lose money, we can go after you as a tortfeasor. You're a mazik. You're a mazik, even indirectly, b'lidei Garmi. In this lecture, we shall not really discuss the parameters of Garmi. That would make the lecture completely, impossibly complex and unmanageable. We shall instead focus on the application of the principle of Arvus and what its rules are, what its limitations, and how it is applied. We begin with the radical Ritva. The Ritva in Bav Metzia and Afayin Gimel. The Gemara there brings a din. Someone gave a shliach, an agent, money to purchase wine for him, and the expectation was this was a commercial venture. The wine wasn't being bought for personal consumption. It was a business deal. He expected to make a profit. The agent was pasha, negligently did not do what he was supposed to do, did not buy the wine. So he returned the money, but the principal lost the potential profit from this business deal. So the Gemara says, Mishalem le'kidakaz la'parvasu de Zilshvat. Exactly what the situation of Zilshvat was, whether that was a place where wine could be bought cheaply or sold expensively, there are technical different ways to explain this Gemara. For our purposes, we will simply understand that there was the loss of a potential business deal, potential profit, and the agent is held liable for that profit, and he must compensate his principal for the expected profit. The Gemara actually rejects this. We do not paskin like this. The Gemara says, Rav Ashi says, that he's not chayev. My taima, asmachtahi, asmachta lokanya. This is an asmachta. He promised either explicitly or implicitly that if he doesn't do the deal and get the profit, he'll be responsible. But that's an asmachta. It was a conditional statement. If I don't do it, I'll pay you. That's an asmachta, asmachta lokanya. The Gemara asks in Rav Ashi, Maishnam ehadatnan, im over velo avra shalom bemeitva. The Gemara says about an aris, a sharecropper, who's supposed to work the field, he receives from the landowner, yielding profit and splitting the profit with him. If he chooses not to work, then he will be held responsible for the expected profit. We don't say anything about asmachta. The Gemara says, yeah, well, hasam biyado, hachalav biyado. A sharecropper, a farmer, it's in his control. He can work. If he doesn't work, that was purely his decision, so he's responsible. Hachalav biyado, to purchase wine, who said the wine was available? There are two parties to a transaction. The sellers would have had to cooperate. Since that's not biyado, that becomes asmachta, and therefore we do not paskin that the agent is liable for the lost profit. Now, there's a major machlokas we showed him here. What, putting aside the objection of asmachta, or Ravashi's objection, according to the first opinion of the Gemara, Rav Chama, he would have been responsible. Why? On what basis? How would he be held responsible? So many Rishonim say that the Mekinu Kimta that we're talking about, where he explicitly committed himself to his principle that he will be chayev. The Ritva brings such an approach, but then rejects it. He says, Mori Harav Tiretz, his Rebbe, his teacher says, Afal Pi Shelo Kibalav Teshlum Ben Klal. Even without any explicit commitment on his part, he will anyway be held liable, according to the Havmin of the Gemara. Why? Kevan Shenasin La Ma'os of Likach Scharaso, because the principal entrusted him with his cash to buy the merchandise, and he relied on him. Il Malei Huha Yalakech Haidei Atzma Haidei Acherim. If not for the Shliach's commitment to do the job, he would have done it himself, or he would have found another agent. El Shezeh Hevticho Sheikach Lo V'Samach Lo V'Nasin La Ma'os of Al Das Kain. He relied on him. He entrusted his money to him. He committed himself. He therefore is responsible to pay whatever the principal lost, meaning the lost profit. Why? This is a dinariv. He relied on him. He trusted him. Committed himself. That's a dinariv. Ritva goes further. This is the idea of schiras paalim that we find later in the Masechta. That they are obligated to compensate the balabayas for any loss he had. If they choose not to do the job and he therefore suffers a loss, his property is thereby damaged, they're going to be held responsible to him for the damage that he incurred based upon his reliance on them. Or in reverse, if the balabayas withdraws the job offer and they're stuck without a job, he will be held liable to them. The kevin shesamchu zeh al zeh, since they relied on each other, nischayvu zeh lazeh b'ma shehefsidu al piv, each one is responsible, is liable to the other for any loss he has based upon his reliance upon him. V'zeh din gadol. This is a great principle. This is how the Ritva understands Poelim. And the truth is, as we alluded earlier, the Rishonim struggle and the Achronim mightily to understand Poelim. Many suggest it's Dina de Garmi, the Russian Tosfos. There are other approaches, but the Ritva says, Arvus, reliance damages. Since they relied on each other, similarly in the case of Zilshvat, even without any explicit Hischaivus, the Ritva says, classic Arvus, of course, is with the Hischaivus. The guarantor says, you can rely on me and I will cover the Lova. If he does not pay, I will make you whole. Here the Ritva says, no. The Ritva understands that Arvus is even without any explicit commitment. Arvus means if you the mayor promised to do something and he relies on you to do it, that itself triggers an obligation that you now have to make him whole for any loss or even any loss of profit, any loss of potential revenue he suffers from relying on you. V'zeh din gadol, the Ritva says. Now, in a certain sense, one might think that this Ritva and the people who dispute the Ritva are moot because we don't paskin like this Gemara anyway. The Ritva is just explaining the Havmin of the Gemara that you'd be chayev. We paskin like Ravashi that you're not chayev. Nevertheless, there are major Achronim who do accept this Ritva, and the point they make is that Ravashi's objection only is that it's an asmachta because it's lav biyado. Because based on the details of that case, buying wine was lav biyado, maybe they wouldn't sell. But if we can find cases that are biyado, that don't have the objection of asmachta, then we revert to the havmin of the Gemara that you're chayev, and the way the Ritva understands it, you're chayev even without any explicit commitment. You're chayev simply because he relied on you, because you committed yourself to him and he relied on you. That itself creates an obligation, the great chiddush of this Ritva, without any explicit commitment, the mere fact that you promised and he relied on you creates an obligation that you have to him to make him whole. This is the opinion of the Chasam Sofer and the Nesivos in a number of places. Chasam Sofer brings the Ritva, discusses the ramifications of biyado and not biyado, and therefore concludes, again, this Ritva is nowhere brought in Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara is not brought in Shulchan Aruch, but the Achronim say, if we find cases, Chasam Sofer says, if one gives money to a shliach to buy peros or schara, and he chooses not to do it, and the principal therefore lost the potential revenue, so if the hezek is not borrower, we can't guarantee there would have been profit, he has no claim. But if the hezek is borrower, and the shliach definitely could have done it, it is biyado, and it's his fault that he didn't do it, pasha, you have a ritva, who says chayev. Ulvina is the etid, the Chasam Sofer says, kol haposkim odim lo, all Rishonim agree to the Ritva, but he backtracks slightly. He says, Hov lamatsasi kein lahedya. He hasn't really found a consensus of Poskin that explicitly endorsed the Ritva, and there is possibly a dissenting view. Al-Kain, he says, he waffles, he says, Kishiyavu liyadi era lafashil batei al kolpanim. If I had such a case, I would make a pshara. But he himself, in Svara, is strongly inclined to the view of the Ritva. The Nesivos, in three or four places, goes with this Ritva, except the Nesivos muddles the issue slightly by bringing several other pshatim in the sugya of Zilshvat. They all boil down to the notion that you're chayev even without an explicit commitment, but in addition to the Ritva, he brings other Rishonim who say it was a general tekanas chachamim, that anytime someone relies on you, chazal or masakein, that you're chayev to make him whole. It has the same effect as arvus, although it's a tekanas chachamim instead of a din arvus. One way or another, the Nesivos mixes these various pshatim together and in at least three different places endorses the basic idea of the Ritva that anytime someone relies on you, you thereby have an obligation to make him whole for anything he suffers based on his reliance. One case, the Shulchan Aruch brings the basic din, if someone gives money to a shliach to buy something and the shliach doesn't do it, ein lo olav ela terumus. As we said, we don't paskin like that Gemara and Bav Metzia. The maskana is there is no taina al pi din. The Siva says, you have this Gemara of Zilshvat, though, and as long as you can avoid the Asmachta problem, you'll be Chayev. The Nechanami says, according to the Ritva, you'll be Chayev. Lefiza Neri, he says, B'shliach, B'schar, and various other conditions are met. The details will omit for now, but if he's a Kablon and not a Poel, who's allowed to be Chozer, and it's Biyado, he'll be Chayev L'shal M'nias HaRevach, not just Hefzid, even M'nias HaRevach, lost profit, lost potential revenue. If we see that other merchants who did go through with this deal did profit, so it's clear that there would have been profit, the shliach will indeed be chayev based on this ritva, even though he never promised to be responsible. The mere fact that he promised to do the job, even though he never promised to pay if he doesn't, he's chayev. Another case, in Hilcha Shutfin, the Ramah brings a din that shluchim, that shutfin, who share merchandise, are supposed to sell at the appropriate time, the time that the general consensus of merchants is that this is the best, most profitable time to sell. If one shutf unilaterally sells early, and he realizes less revenue for the partnership, havi pshia, v'chayev l'shalom l'chaver l'chelka. He has to pay his partner the difference between the actual price and what they could have gotten had they waited till the appropriate time. So the Achronim ask, Mikzos, Nesivos, Marshach, other Achronim, why? Let's say he's a Mazik. Let's say for selling when he wasn't supposed to, he's a Mazik. So the fundamental rule of Mazik is, he always pays Kefima Shashav and Beshas HaNezek, what the item was worth now. Right now, the item is not worth what it would be worth tomorrow. Right now, it's worth less. So how on earth, if we're trying to apply the rules of Mazik, how on earth can we make him pay the difference between today's value and tomorrow's greater value? So Nesiva says, again, because we have this powerful principle of Arvus, based on the Ritva, the Gemara of Zulshvat, anyone who relies on someone else, that other person thereby becomes obligated to make the person who relied whole if he breaks his trust with him and causes him a loss, even if that loss is just the loss of profit. So here too, since each partner relies on the other to sell at the appropriate time and not to sell at an incorrect time, the other shutif thereby gains an obligation to compensate the shutif for any potential loss of profit that he caused by selling too early. Third Nesivus, in Siman Shin Vav, in the laws of Umnim, the question is, if an Uman was supposed to dye some wool, he was given wool by his client, he was supposed to dye it one color and dye it a different color, so there's a machlokas man shach, but there is an opinion that he's chayef to pay for the potential lost revenue. If the wool would have been worth much more dyed the correct color, he has to pay the difference between what it's worth, the color that he did dye it, say red, and the greater value that it would have been worth had he dyed the proper color, which was black. The question again is why? How can he be held liable for that lost profit? So Nesiva says again, because that's this rule of Schiris Polim, the way the Ritva explains, and the Gemara of Zulshvat, that you have to pay anything that he could have achieved had you done what you were supposed to do. Since he trusted you to follow your instructions, to dye the textile the right color, and there would have been an expected and clearly defined greater profit, and it was biyado, there was nobody else involved, you could have and should have done it, he relied on you to do it, had you not been around, he could have dyed it himself or hired somebody else, therefore, you are indeed liable for any lost profit, any lost revenue that he could have had by having his textile dyed the right color. So that's in the Sivus and the Chasam Sofer, both accept this Ritva, and Chasam Sofer even says he doesn't know anyone who disagrees, although again, it is far from clear that this is Muskim, this is the opinion of the Zachronim. Again, when it comes to Polim, many posts can bring other explanations. The Russian Tosis bring Garmi. Other posts can have other explanations. Rick Reger points this out. Nevertheless, the Nesivos and the Chasam Sofer both seem to agree with the Ritva that this is indeed a Din Gadol. Another case in Halacha where the principle of reliance appears is a Chuvas HaRosh, who actually mentions nothing at all about Arvus or reliance, but there's a great literature that developed around the Rosh concerning the question of why he didn't say anything about Arvus, and the various svaras the poskim give are extremely important rules and qualifications for the application of Arvus. The Rosh's case, Reuven had a cow. Reuven was afraid to slaughter his cow because it might be a trefa, and then he would lose the value of the cow. Amar lo Shimon. Shimon said, don't worry, slaughter the cow. Im timtze trefa ni etin lecha bavor abasar kach v'kach, im timtze ksheira ni etin lecha kach v'kach. There are different girsos in the tshuva, but either way, the point is, Shimon promised to compensate Reuven some fixed amount in the event that it's a trefa. So Reuven said, okay, he shechted the cow. Shimon actually gave a mashkin. He gave a mashkin to Reuven, biad shlish, actually, in a third party, to guarantee that he would pay for the cow. And sure enough, Reuven listened to him, the cow became a trefa, and Shimon did not want to pay. So the Rosh sided with Shimon. The Rosh said Shimon does not have to pay. Yirat li, mekach zeh nasib lo kinyan. There was no proper kinyan for Shimon's commitment. Lohoya kana l'dvarim ba'alma. V'yachol Shimon lachzer bo. The Rosh goes back and forth discussing the laws of kinyan. The Rosh says nothing about Arvus, but the Rosh says that Shimon is indeed off the hook. He does not have to pay. The Beis Yosef, Later, Achronim ask, what about Arvus? Reuven relied on Shimon, so why is Shimon not chayav din Arev? The Ketzos asks, what about Garmi? Again, we're not going to discuss the rules of Garmi, but the Beis Yosef and the Ketzos and other Achronim ask, what about Arvus? This is just like Arvus. He told him that you're worried about a loss. I'll cover you. I'll make you whole in the event of a loss. Beis Yosef gives two terutzim. The first terutz is that the maskana of the Gemara in Bava Basra is that the sin quanon of Arvus is bahi hanad mehemen le, that the person who commits himself is trusting and relying on the Arev. Here, lohimne, shreinasin lamashkin. So paradoxically, the Beis Yosef says, the fact that Shimon gave a mashkin reduces his liability. Had he given no mashkin, Reuven would then be relying completely on Shimon's word. Shimon would be chayev. Since Shimon gave a mashkin, Reuven isn't relying simply on Shimon's commitment. Therefore, Shimon is not chayev. And he can't take from the mashkin either, because mon ein kan mashkin ein kan. Since Shimon is not chayev, the mashkin doesn't change anything, and therefore Reuven is up the creek without a paddle. Second approach to the Beis Yosef. This can't be Arvus because the transaction wasn't structured as Arvus. Lav mitaras Arvus nachisla. This was not a guarantee type of transaction. Derech mekhu memkar. Shimon was essentially buying the meat, but shehisne shem teitik sheri to buy the kach v'kach. The deal was, if the meat is kosher, I'll pay you X dollars a pound. If it's trefa, I'll pay you a different value, presumably less, but still a significant sum. Since this was structured as a sale, even though Reuven was clearly worried about the possibility of trefa, and he only shechted it based on Shimon's commitment to buy, but the transaction was structured as a sale, as mekach u'memkar. And once it's mekach u'memkar, it has to have a kenyan. And since there was no kenyan, lav klomu. So these are the Beis Yosef's two reasons why there is no din arvus in the case of the rush, and why Shimon is off the hook, and we are not mechayev him because of arvus. Rav Ozer, in his Ha'aras on the Shulchan Aruch and the Ketzos, give a third reason. They mention the principle of zrok mana liyam, throw a mana, throw some money into the ocean. This is a major machlokes Rishonim. It is not actually discussed in the Gemara. It comes up in the Rishonim and the Gemara and Kedushin in the continuation of the sugya we mentioned earlier about Tein Mana L'Ploni by Kaddish and Ilach. There's a major machlokes among Sephardic Rishonim, the Rosh also, whether normal Arvus is, lend money to Reuven and I'll be responsible. Or in the case of Kedushin, give the ring, give the Kedushin, the woman says, to Reuven and I'll marry you. What if instead of saying give or lend to Reuven, the Arev says, throw the money away, throw it into the ocean, and I'll compensate you. Is there a din arvus? So this is a machlokes aposkim. The Ramah actually brings both opinions. There is something of a dispute in the Achronim, how we paskin, no clear hachra. Some Rishonim say that's arvus, since sof kol sof, he committed himself, he changed his course, he gave up the money based on you, your chayev. Other Rishonim say no. An additional condition is someone, a bendas, someone has to have received hana. If nobody receives hana, the money was just thrown away, there's no din arvus. So Rav Ozer and the Ketzos say, that's why in the case of the Rosh, there's no din arvus. Because it turned out that the para was worth nothing, because it was a trefa. Nobody benefited from it. You can't eat it. So therefore, that's like Zrok Man Aliyam. And the Rosh holds that Zrok Man Aliyam is potter. Since a nana shumadam kan b'shchitas behem a trefa shalo, nobody gained anything, there's no din arvus. Rav Ozer says that since it's a sveka d'dina, we'll paskin that if Reuven is the muksik and the mashkin, he can keep it. But the Rosh himself held that Zrok Man Aliyam is potter, and therefore arvus does not apply, and this is the approach of the Ketzos also. One profoundly important dissenting view is found in the Mogen Shol of Rav Shaul Katzenellenbogen, recently printed a couple of decades ago. He quotes a shita of Harav HaGadol, Rav Mendel Ziv, the Gaivit of Tavrig. This is apparently Rav Gershon Mendel Ziv, a noted posik in Litta. The Mogen Shol and this Rav Ziv, they objected to the Ketzos and Rav Ozer. They said this has nothing to do with Zrok Man Aliyam. They explain the reason why some Rishonim say Zrok Man Aliyam is potter is because that's not Arvus, that's not business, that's Inyan Shtus Ba'alma. That's just being silly. That's why there's no obligation, because that's not a reasonable business transaction. L'shayek was an Arvus, because it's just Shtus. Inyan Nidon Nidon, which was Derech Mischar, Beis Yosef says it was totally Miskar. It wasn't Arvus at all, but certainly it's not Inyan Shtus. Chayav Kuli Alma Din Arvus. He has a long pilpul. He goes back and forth to try to, the Magen Shaul, to try to establish this rule, that Derech Miskar Shaini, as he calls it. And this is strongly the way he leans. He ends by saying Tzarchi and Gadol. But this is Mikol Zanera, he says. He brings a number of Rayas, which are actually, many of them are debatable, but he brings a number of Rayas to his rule that Eino Derech Shtus, Shaper Havi Ariv. Zrok Mon Aliyam is a very specific, very narrow principle that something which is Derech Shtus, there is no Din Arvus. Anything which is not Derech Shtus, there is a Din Arvus. And that's why he says Zrok Mon Aliyam, the principle of Zrok Mon Aliyam, is completely irrelevant to the discussion of the Rush. One of the Rayas he brings, incidentally, is from our story of Yaakov and Yehuda and Binyamin. He brings the Gemara in Bava Basra, that Yalef Arvus mi Yehuda, who said Anochi Arvenu, and he brings Achronim, Beis Yosef, Levush, Letaz, Ha'ikra L'chudu mi Yehuda, that even L'maskana the Gemara that we say by Hiyanad to come Amenle, at the end of the day, the Ikra is really from Yehuda. He also brings Rashi and Miketz, who says, V'yitzaktiv L'fanecha, Yehuda promised Yaakov, I will present him before you, B'chayim V'lomeis, I'll present him alive. So he says, why isn't that Zrok Mon Aliyam? If Binyamin died, nobody got anything. Afiluachi Shayach was Din Arvus. Now, I always felt that he did get something. Yehuda wanted Binyamin in order to go down to Mitzrayim to be able to appear before Yosef to get out of trouble and get the wheat. So he did get something. Nevertheless, the Magen Shaul feels that since if Binyamin died, that's called Zrok Mon Aliyam. Nobody got anything. Nevertheless, the Torah says that's Arvus. So you see that Zrok Mon Aliyam is a narrow principle limited to Derech Shtus. But as we have said, his rayas are not wholly persuasive. And as we shall see in the remainder of this lecture, poskim do apply the rule. Many poskim, Rishonim and Achronim, pretty clearly apply the concept of Zrok Mon Aliyam to cases which are absolutely not Derech Shtus. And they nevertheless say that according to the Rishonim that say Zrok Mon Aliyam is Potter, there will be no Arvus in such cases, even though they are not Derech Shtus. So I don't really know what to make of this Magen Shaul. Another reason, also of profound implications, another reason why Arvus might not apply in the case of the Rush, where Shimon promised to compensate him if the cow is a trefa, is mentioned by Ramer Arik in his Minchas Pitim. Ramer Arik is discussing a svara that in certain cases you don't say Arvus because Avar Inish Dezavan Araliyama. If the person doing the transaction may not be relying on you because the transaction is something that he might be doing anyway, and he didn't explicitly say that he's only doing it because of your commitment, even though you promised him and he then went ahead and did it, he might have done it anyway, so there's no Din Arvus. So Rameir Arik says, Kolshkein, if somebody wants to buy property or metalflin, he has a business deal, he wants to do something, but he's worried about loss, there is risk in this deal, someone tells him, don't worry, I'll cover you. If you lose anything, I'll cover you. So Rameir Arik says, Ein Arav Meshubet. It should be the Ein Arav Meshubet. Because of this rule, Avin Inish Dezavan B'Law Arav. Certainly there are some people who are less risk-averse who would do the deal without any safety net. So even if you were reluctant to do it and you only jumped after he promised you, we can't know for sure that you wouldn't have done it another way, so there's no Arvus. Then he brings Ar Chuvus Arush, and he says that this is L'chara Raya, that the Arvus does apply in such a case, even though he might have done it anyway, because certainly people do sometimes shech their cows, even if they might be trefas, so Arvus should not apply. Yet we see that the Beis Yosef and the Ktos, the Poskim, all seem to assume that Arvus would apply, except for the other reasons. So he says, you see from there, that even though there's a svar of Avin Inish Dezavan Araliyama, still, if he didn't act until he heard from you, Arvus should apply. In other words, he was proposing another reason, another way to explain the Rush, why there's no Din Arvus, but he says from the Beis Yosef and the later Achronim, who all asked the Kasha, why is there no Arvus, they seem to assume that even though there's a possibility that he would have done it anyway, there still is a Din Arvus. So certainly, he says, in a case where he clearly didn't want to do it without you, in a case where he was Yare Liknas Achayef and Shemayafsid, and he only did it based on you, then there's certainly Arvus. In a case where it's less clear, the argument could be made that Arvus would not apply, even if he didn't act until you promised to make him whole. Another area where Arvus comes up is a Chuvus HaRashba, which is actually brought by the Rama in two different places, in Hilchos Shluchim, in Kuf Pei Beis and Kuf Pei Gimel. The Rashba is in his Chuvus in Chelek Aleph and Elef Vav. Rashba talked about a case where the principal instructed the Shliach buy certain merchandise, buy these garments, and I'll partner with you. I'll pay for half the cost. So then, after the shliach went ahead, laid out his own money, apparently, and bought them, Mishalach says, I changed my mind. I was bluffing. Not changed my mind. Mishatani bach. I never meant it. I don't want to pay. Rashba says, nope, sorry. You promised him you would pay. You have to pay. So the problem is, though, why do you have to pay? So the Rashba says two things. First, he says, shlicha shavye. He appointed him an agent. Then he says, you can't say mishatani bach, because it's like an arev b'shas matan mos. Just like every Arev who promised and the guy relied on him, he can't turn around and say, Mashatani Bach, I'm not committed. So too here. So there's considerable uncertainty, dispute in the Achronim, whether the primary svar of the Rashba is the first thing he says, Shlicha Shavye, that the Shliach is considered to have been acting, even though he laid out his own money, he's been acting as an agent to the Balabayas. So the Balabayas has bought the Schara, and therefore he's obligated to pay the Shliach. Or the end of the Rashba, Arvus. Some Achronim seem to want to learn that the Iker theory of the Rashba is Shlichus, and he only brings an Arvus as a Raya that you can't say Mishata. Other Achronim, though, assume that Arvus is a, or even the, primary reason for the obligation of the principal to the Shliach. The Beis Yaakov of Susmir says the reason is because of Arvus, and he gets into a whole pilpul about the rules of Arvus, Arvus B'davar Shein HaKatzav, certain technical rules of Arvus that are beyond the scope of this discussion, but he clearly understood his whole tshuva is based on the idea that the rationale for the chiyuv is Arvus. The Erech Shai makes this point too. He brings a gon. The gon brings a raya from a gemara that we say shlichus, and the gon says, it's a very nice raya. The Rashba himself brings it, he says somewhere, but shlichus is only relevant between the principal and the seller. If the principal wants to tell the seller, I never bought it from you, my agent bought it, so we say, no, shlichus, he's your agent, you're liable. Or if the seller wants to back out, the buyer can say, no, I bought it through my agent. So if they're having a dispute, then shlichus is relevant, he says. But if the dispute is between, as in the case of the Arashba, if the dispute is between the principal and the agent says, pay me, and the principal says, no, that has nothing to do with shlichus, he says, particularly if he may not have even been a bar shlichus. He might have been a katan or someone who's not a bar shlichus. That's Arvus, he says. That's a din of Arvus. That has nothing to do with the Gemara of shlichus. So there might be two possible mechanisms in the case of the Rashba, but there certainly is a mechanism of Arvus, and that nafkamina is, he says, where the shlich is not a bar shlichus. He left with Arvus. The Ktzos and the Nesivos and Kufpe Gimel, Nesivos and Kufpe Beis and Kufpe Gimel, the Ktzos and the Nesivos also both say that Arvus applies here, that since the shliach laid out the money, committed himself based upon the representations of the principal to compensate him to take half of it off his hands, therefore, he is indeed liable as an arev, he must pay the shliach whatever he promised him. In spite of all these achronim, though, the Ktzos, Nesivos, Beis Yaakov, the Erech Shai, who say there is a mechanism of arvus operating here, there are also several later achronim who say that arvus does not apply here, for a couple of different reasons. The Bachacher, Rav Avraham of Bachach, in his Ketzav Kedoshim on this din, says he's not so sure that Arvus should really apply. Why, he says? Because Arvus, again, means that if the guy committed himself, if the person laid out, gave up money, and relies on you to get it back, that's Arvus. He says, here, Lo Shayach Hemne, I'm not trusting you to make me whole, because I paid money, but I got Tzara. I didn't lose anything. I simply exchanged my cash for merchandise. And I exchanged it at a fair price, at the going rate. The merchandise was worth the price I paid for it. Ubeprat, he says, it's readily convertible back into cash. It's liquid. It's easily convertible back to cash. So who said there's Arvus in such a case? He says, he's not convinced that Arvus really works. This is also the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think it was Moshe, at greater length. Rav Moshe was talking about a case, a very similar case, where someone asked someone else to buy something for him, and the shliach was a broker. He was going to get a profit, a sarsur, a shadchanus, as the broker, and he laid out the money also. Instead of the principal simply retracting, deciding not to buy, the property was damaged before they got to the before he took possession. Who takes the loss, the principal or the agent? So Rav Moshe says, the Sveikin Adina, he has a pilpul explaining why. In the course of which he says, that which the Ksos and the Siva says, and in such a case is an obligation of Arvus, he says, lo nachon klal. This is absolutely not correct, he says. Arvus is only where somebody spent money, he lent money, he laid out money, he doesn't have anything, there's a realistic hashash of hefsid, maybe the debtor won't repay. Then he says, both reasons of the Gemara, the reason of Anochi Arvenu, the Havmin of the Gemara, the Maskana of Behemenle, that's when you have Arvus. Anochi Arvenu, I'm relying on you. Behemenle, because I'm relying on you. He says, Kishalekha Chashash Hefsid, like in our case, there was no Chashash Hefsid, even though ironically there was a Hefsid, it was Nensu, but I guess he means there was no foreseeable, there was no realistic and reasonable chance of Hefsid, and Kahana, there was no real Hana. Adraba Omid Laharviach Bazeh, he stood to profit. That's why he sent him. It was a business deal. He wanted to make the profit of the brokerage fee. Ein kanamanus me'ashliach l'mashalach. There's no trust. There's no reliance, he says. It's just business. He's the pasuk Anochi Arvenu, he says, is talking about chashash hefsid, where there was a foreseeable possibility of loss, of default. That's why he wanted the arev, he said. He said, below chashash ibud, ein shaychus l'arvus klal. L'chein mistavri says, borer, anytime you tell the shliach to lay out money on something which is worth that price, the same as the kesef kedushim in greater detail, it's barer mistaver that barer that there is no din arvus. The zkan Aaron Pinskarov or Aaron Walkin, he has a different svara why there's no din arvus. He was talking about a case very similar to Rav Moshe. Shimon was traveling, was planning on making a purchase, buying some tefuah. Reuven said, you know what? If you're buying tefuah, buy a quantity for me too. Buy a shlish wagon, a third of a wagon, either an actual wagon or a train compartment. Buy some for me too. And bring them together in the same wagon as your merchandise. Bring it back to me and I'll pay you when you get back. You lay out the money, I'll pay you on delivery, cash on delivery. Shimon did it, gratis, no charge, favor for Reuven. He got something. He got Ezet Tovas Hanot Dadius, but no charge. So he brought for Reuven 300 pud, some measure of grain. And again, like in Ramosh's case, Nishrefa Kalaschara, it was all burned before he took possession. He took some of it. He took possession of some, a 40 pud, but not the rest of it. Again, same as Ramosh, who takes the loss? So he says, you'd think this was the din of Arvus. He says, if we know that the shliach would not have bought the extra 300 pud were it not for Reuven's desire for it, of Reuven's promise to take it off his hands, that would be a din arev, he says. But he says, no. He says, lemaisa, he says, there was no din arevus, not exactly for the reason of the bachatra and Rav Moshe, because he wasn't motzi anything, but for a reason very similar to that of Rav Meir Arik that we saw before. Rav Meir Arik said, that since Zavan Inish Ara Liyoma, since people do sometimes take risks, we can't prove that he never would have done it otherwise. There's no din arvus. So Rav Walkin says pretty much the same thing here, that we don't know that he wouldn't have bought it for himself. He says, first of all, he says, we have to know for sure, since he never explicitly promised, he didn't say Vani Arev, he said, we have to know for sure that the Shliach would never have done it were it not for the commitment of the Mishalach. And if not for that commitment, he never would have bought more than the 600 he was buying for himself. He never would have bought the extra 300 that he bought for the Mishalech. And also, the Mishalech would have to know that the Shalech is relying on him and would not be doing it in any other circumstance. You need a Hachacha Brura. Even if you don't require a Beferish statement, Chazid Alakas Amechna, even if we don't require that the Shalech, that the Arev explicitly say, I'm relying on you, that the shliach in this case, yeah, I'm relying on you. You do have to have an explicit commitment. For nidon didon, he says, in our case, since this is his job, this is what he does, there's no amdana. Maybe even without the mishalach, he would do it for himself. He would have bought a whole wagon. So we can't know for sure that he did this only because of the commitment of the mishalach. So that's not arvus. He brings another reason why there's no arvus, the svara of the Beis Yosef, that this is Derech Mekka Kumemka. They were doing business. This wasn't Arvus, and therefore we don't apply the rule of Arvus. There is also another tshuva of the Pinskarov. Another tshuva. This one was about two partners had a Tartak. It appears from the tshuva it was some kind of sawmill. They had a factory. machinery. They would saw timber, logs into timber, into boards, into usable wood. The Reuven was a merchant who had forests. He owned or he leased forests. And they claim, at least, that he promised them he used to have his timber sawed in this mill. And they claim that he told them a year ago that you, in your Tartuk, in your mill, you need one more gator, some other, one more machine, one more rotor, one more something, one more piece of machinery, because I'm going to have so much wood for you. And you know, even with your two gators, he says, halavai, that you should have enough capacity to do all the wonderful jobs I'm going to give you. So they indeed invested in another machine. They had to not only another gator, they had to have another mechuna, he says. The mechuna was too small. Its output wasn't enough to drive two gators, he says. They had to replace the machine, buy another gator. This was a great expense. And they invested money on this, all because of this very hopeful plan that they would have all this additional business. They spent more than $4,000, he says. And then Reuven changed his mind, and he bought his own Tartuk, his own factory, his own mill, and now he's not giving them all this extra business. And the Shutrim are saying, we spent all this money, and now we have no business, we can't even afford it, and what did you do to us? So again, much of the tshuva is about Garmi, which he explains does not apply, but he also discusses Arvus. Maybe Arvus applies. They spent money al piv, so maybe this is Arvus. So he proposes a number of reasons why Arvus does not apply. He says the Beis Yosef's reasons do not apply here. This was not Mechachu Memkar. This was a clear commitment that they only invested in the Tartuk based on his representations. So why should there be no Arvus here? So we give several reasons why there's no Arvus. Primary reason he gives is because this was a Davar Sheino Katzuv. This is what the Beis Yaakov talks about at great length too in his tshuva, that there's a major discussion in the poskim, whether a person can have any obligation in general, particularly the obligation of Arvus, which is anyway on shakier ground because it's an asmachta. Since it's a Davar Sheino Katzuv, he didn't promise them how many years he would give them wood, he didn't promise them a fixed quantity of wood. That's called Davar Sheino Katzuv. So therefore, that's a technical objection to the existence of a chiyuv of Arvus. Another reason he gives is, again, since he didn't say explicitly, I commit myself as an Arev to pay you, we have to say that there's an assumption that they would never have done it without him. He says we can't really say that, even though initially, as I said, it seemed clear that they only did it because of him. He says no. Again, he goes through the same logic. We have to know for sure that they relied on him, and that he has to have known they were relying on him. And hey, you don't really have that, he says. For the same reasons as Davar Sheino Katzuv, he says, for the same reasons that the obligation is not fixed, he didn't promise them exactly how much, how many years, how much. He can't say they relied on him, he says. With such an amorphous, vague, ill-defined commitment, he says, it's not possible to say that this is a real rigid dinarvus, they were strictly relying on him, even though it seemed pretty clear from the Shaila that they would never have done it without his promise. But since his promise wasn't well-defined, wasn't exact and precise, we cannot say that they relied on him. That's not proper formal arvus, he says, and therefore, ein lechayva b'chi agavna mitam arif. Kitzur shel davar, he ends with a very interesting summary. Me'ashkafas hadin, he says, eini motzel anachon lechayv l'ruvein. I cannot hold the businessman who welched on his promise, I cannot hold him liable, midina, lo mitam mazik, lo mitam arif. However, he says, based on pshara, he says, certainly he should compensate them for their terrible loss, hezegadol. And he says exactly how to make the pshara. He says, kashil l'shar me'rachok, I'm far away. He says, I would have to recognize in detail the business, the financial status of the litigants, he says. It's difficult to do from far away. He says, I would really like to find some justification for these two poor factory owners to win, he says, because his correspondents had described them as being in a terrible situation. Matzavam kinorahu, v'nerusu aydezeh, they're going to go bankrupt, their business is devastated. Aval ma'as, he says, tarihi v'emes k'sivba, I can't issue a ruling which is not al pidin. V'dolos eder, you can't favor a poor person. This is something we've discussed at length elsewhere, but he says, in terms of din, you can't issue a ruling which is against the halacha. Dolos eder tivsol on a tarak dosha. La ucha la aves badin mashur neged tichli. I can't issue a ruling which is against my understanding, but again, atzasi lahavi elidei pasher. You should try to persuade them to reach some kind of settlement. One last area in which the principle of arvus comes up is in the very practical situation of deliveries. I recently was just asked a question like this. Someone placed an order with a bakery to deliver pastries, baked goods. They did as they typically did. They simply dropped the box outside his house, and when he came to look for it, it wasn't there. They say they delivered it. He never got it. Is he indeed liable to pay the bakery for the price for the goods? So there are a number of issues involved here too. Kinyan, is there a kinyan? We're not going to discuss that part of the question. We're just going to discuss arvus. Since the customer tells the supplier, deliver it and I'll pay, is there a din arvus? Can he be held responsible to pay because of the din arvus? So this discussion is rooted in a Mishnah in Bav Metzia. The Mishnah is not discussing sales or deliveries, it's discussing borrowing. Someone wants to borrow a cow from someone else, and he says, send me the cow. Send it via my son, my servant, your servant. What's the halacha? When does his liability begin? Immediately when the owner sends it out, or only when it enters his possession? And vice versa, when he sends the cow back, when do his responsibilities terminate? As soon as he sends the cow, or only when it enters the possession of the owner? So the Mishnah says, basically, it depends. If the recipient instructed the sender to send it, then he is liable immediately. If he did not instruct him, then generally he is not liable. That is roughly the principle here. So the Rishonim discuss, why is he liable immediately, assuming he did indeed instruct the sender to send it, why does that engender liability? On what theory is he liable? So the Rishonim give two approaches. One is shlichus, that by saying send via so-and-so, so-and-so becomes your shliach, and as soon as he takes possession of it, it's as though you've taken possession. Another approach, the one that concerns us here, is arvus. The Ran says, Yesh lomar, hacha lami din shlichus hu alami din arev. Kevin sha'amar lo lahotzi parasur merashuso, v'shelcha biad avdo, nischayev din arev. Kechol moti moman merashuso al pi chaveiro, nischayev lo chaveiro bit din arev. That's a din arvus. Ritva says the same thing. Hacha lami din she'el nischayev by lakol sha'amar lachaveiro shiyotzi mamanu al piv, l'makum she'ena mishtamar. Ochi zruken liyam, l'chayotzi bo, zrokman liyam again. Ritva, reminiscent of the other Ritva, Avla Kulam Arev. Arev is a din gadol. Like the Ran, the Ritva says, it's a din arvus. As soon as the sender releases it from his possession, he was motzi mos. He has no control over it. There's a risk now. Therefore, it's a din arev, and the recipient becomes liable. The Sivas discusses this in a number of different passages. The Nesivos points out repeatedly that a nafkamina between these two reasons, as we mentioned briefly earlier, is if the shliach is not a bar shlichus, chere, shote, bekatan, non-Jew, shlichus does not apply, arvus does. The Nesivos actually contradicts himself. In one place he says that if he sends via a chere, shote, bekatan, that there would not be a din arvus either, certainly not shlichus, but not arvus either, because that's like zrok man aliyam, because since they're not responsible, Katan, not responsible, therefore it's like thrown into the ocean. Other places in the Siva says, since he is a human being, he has some level of das. That's not like Zorak Manaliyam. But in general, the Siva spends a lot of time on this Shita, that it's a form of arvus, and therefore the recipient who instructed him to send it will be liable immediately. Now, the Erech Shai has a very interesting idea here. He says that this whole discussion of arvus in the Rishonim, which Nesiva seems to accept, he says the whole discussion of arvus only begins according to the Rishonim who say that Zrok Man Aliyam is Chayev. Nesiva said that was true by a katan, even though he contradicts himself on that too, but the Nesiva at most says that by a katan, arvus would depend on Zrok Man Aliyam because he's not responsible. The Erech Shai says even a gadol Yisrael ben Das, a perfectly good shliach, it still does not work if you hold Zrok Man Aliyam as Potter, because why did the Rishonim say Zrok Man Aliyam as Potter? Because you need Matya Hanal Ben Das. Somebody has to have received some benefit. A shliach receives no benefit. He's simply a conduit. He takes it and passes it along to the owner. So as far as he's concerned, he's like the yam. He hasn't received any benefit. So certainly it's not shtus. Certainly the Rishonim who talk about Zerukman Liyam here, that Rishonim and Achronim are all not going with the Magen Shaul's idea that Zerukman Liyam is limited to shtus. The Erech Shai says, anytime you send something via shliach, that's only a valid arvus if you say Zerukman Liyam is chayev. If you say Zerukman Liyam is chayev, that means we don't care about Matya Hanah. We don't need any Hanah. Simply the release of the property from my custody itself is enough for arvus. Then if I tell you send it via shliach, we can say arvus. But if you say Zerukman Liyam is Potter, we need Matya Hanal Bendas, then Arvus is completely inapplicable, and the recipient will have no liability until he gets it, or unless we say the mechanism of Shlichus. So that's the Erech Shai. And we find Lishitase in a Tshuva Halacha Lamaisa about deliveries, where he rules this way. He talks about a case where Reuven had bought grapes from Shimon, and the arrangement was that Reuven would instruct Shimon, it was sort of drop shipping, I guess, Reuven would instruct Shimon where to ship the grapes to his customers, and Shimon would put them on the train according to his instructions and send them off. So once they were sent off on the train, and a problem arose, the customers somehow wound up underpaying, the invoice was entered incorrectly, so the customers underpaid, and they're not giving the grapes back or the money back, so basically the grapes were lost. The question is, who takes the loss? Shimon put them on the train according to Reuven's instructions, but Reuven never actually made a kinyan because they went straight from Shimon's warehouse to the customers. So, is Reuven chayev or is Shimon chayev? So the Erech Shai says, the Tshuva Shai and the Tshuva says, since Rokman Eliyam is potter, therefore Reuven has no liability. L'shitasi with what he says in the Erech Shai, even though we have a Mishnah that says that when you say send, there isn't an arev. But the Erech Shai explains that's only according to the Rishonim who say that are Lishitasam, the Ran, the Ritva, because they hold Zerukman Liyam is Chayev. Therefore, they hold that when the customer tells the supplier, send them on the train, we can apply a Din of Arvus, because even though nobody got Hana, because the train is just a conduit, the train doesn't have any Hana, but since the supplier released the merchandise from his custody, that's Arvus like Zerukman Liyam. But insofar as we paskin Zerukman Liyam is Potter, or the Tshuva Shai says it's a Safek. He has an additional Svara why you should be Potter. But a large part of his Svara is, since Zerukman Liyam is Potter, therefore, Arvus does not apply in the case where they were sent on a train and Reuven never received them and never had any Hana. Divrei Malkiel also discusses sending merchandise on a train. In his case, again, he says someone told a merchant far away, send the merchandise via the train. And what happened was, it was stolen from the train. Somebody ransacked the cargo. He placed stones in the cargo so nobody would realize it, keep the weight the same, so that when they measured officially make sure the merchandise was still there, it was measured as full. That's why the train administration didn't pick up on this. So who takes the hefsid? So he takes for granted that there is an application of the rule of Arvus. He was motzi mos al piv. His only question is, he goes back and forth, but his main reason not to say this is because it would depend, he says, on what the arrangement was. If the idea was that as soon as they're shipped, he becomes liable, payment is due immediately, then that would be classic Arvus. Since you did what I told you to do, you shipped them, and that triggers my commitment, and then there's Arvus. Since I promised to pay as soon as you do your part, there's Arvus. However, he says, if the arrangement was, it was custom of furash in the Nachnema, he says, if the arrangement was cash on delivery, then he wouldn't be chayev because there was no delivery. But in principle, Arvus does apply, and he does not seem to hold like the Erech Shai that there's no Arvus because, like Zerukman Liyam, either because he holds that, like the Nesivus and the other Achronim, that this is called Mata Hanala Bendas as long as they were adults. Even the Nesivus only said Katan is not. It seems likely he would agree that even a non-Jew, even if he's not a Bar Shlichus, that still is called Hanala Ben Das, or perhaps even held like the Magen Shaul, as Zerukman Liyam is not Nogeh, whenever it was a normal business transaction, although that's kind of hard to say, because virtually everyone disagrees with the Magen Shaul. In any event, he says that in principle, Arvus would apply to deliveries. So again, there are other issues of delivery, Shlichus, but this point, whether the principle of Arvus can apply in the case of a delivery, seems to be a machlokas between the Erech Shai and the different Malkiel. These are some of the loci in which the principle of Arvus applies beyond the technical narrow sense of guaranteeing loans. These are examples where the principle of Arvus can apply throughout Choshen Mishpat. Reliance damages anytime someone relies on you and thereby suffers a loss, even a loss of profit or a loss of revenue, and even according to the famous Ritva, even in a case where you didn't explicitly commit yourself, this is the principle of Arvus, that if he relied on you and you didn't do what you were supposed to do, or in cases where you promised to make him whole and he relied on you, you will be held liable, responsible to make the person who relied on you whole.